So you have a podcast, and you really want to make money with it. Then you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. Check this out. We'll host your podcast for free. You just do your show. We'll use the power of Odyssey's massive expert sales team to place ads in your show and make you money. Does it get any easier than that? Nope. You stay in control of your show, and we help you bring in the money. Sounds like a dream partnership. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start earning more from your content today. The
Score! This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
The views and opinions of Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris should not be taken too seriously,
especially when they give advice.
Do not take Marshall's analogies literally,
especially when it comes to Russell Dorsey.
The sports thoughts of Rahimi and Harris may change at any time. Remember,
it's just sports.
Okay, thanks. Bye. Bye. Bye.
Rahimi and Harris, 10 to 2 on 670. The
Now it is time for meatballs.
Caleb Williams, 5,000 yards, 2025. Book it. Go Bears.
Layla said Dave the cat was hers. Was she trying to steal Grody's cat? Was she? You don't say.
Well, Layla, what do you have to say for yourself?
Nothing. The cat caught me red-handed.
He's just a baby.
The song parody from Paul Epstein. What's the Pope got to do? White Sox are just a second-hand sports team. What's the Pope got to do? Got to do with it. White Sox are still a second-hand sports team.
Your voice is like a combination of Fergie and Jesus.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We broadcast live from the Scores Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You can join us on the text line 312-644-6767. You can also join us on Twitch. We are at twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Our producers are Ray Diaz, Robbie Triano, and Brandon Fryer helping out as well. The video team is Connor O'Donnell, Matt Anaya, and Jenna Duddleston. This is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score, and sadly, we did not get the result that we wanted, but I think we got an expected result when it came to the Bulls getting the 12th overall pick in the NBA draft lottery last night.
And the big question today is, was it worth it?
Put your game down, flip it, and reverse it.
You can go misdemeanor on me, because it feels like it might be more of a felony than a misdemeanor, given where this leaves the Bulls right now.
I think the biggest issue I have with this is, as much as we knew this was going to be a possibility, I push back on the concept of it just being chance. It is, but just like anything else, you still have the opportunity to affect your odds. It's unfortunately kind of like life sometimes, where you know if you have a certain set of odds, like if there's something genetic that runs in your family, like in my Middle Eastern family, the high cholesterol is a thing. You know that you have to do something to affect those odds, and you can only do what you can do. But as we mentioned in the transition segment with David and Mully, what you don't want is for the difference to come down in a coin flip to being first and being 12th. That's where it gets difficult, right? You can only do so much of what you can do, and that's the NBA draft lottery. But when it does happen to affect your chance because of what you did in the season, that's where this becomes difficult and hard to reconcile. When you're so close, where a coin flip decides it, but unfortunately, you end up being so far away because this is the situation that you partially got yourselves into.
When you say partially got yourselves into, I feel like they fully got themselves into this situation. Arturis Karnišovas had decisions to make. I'm with you on the chance thing. I don't think the NBA draft lottery is rigged, although that would be much sexier of a story if it was indeed rigged. But there's just been too many people who have verified how the process works, the weight of the balls, they felt the balls. Like this is a thing that's been going on for years, and it's very, you know, you got the big four involved, Ernst & Young holding the suitcase. getting the results. It's all very much, I don't think it's rigged. But what I do think is you can only control what you can control. And in this, the variable for, and the most important variable for the Bulls is, what is your philosophy as far as team building and how you're going to build a team? Arturis Karnišovas is now getting a second run at that. And I just don't have anything that inspires me to believe that anything next season is going to look like what we just saw last season. And that's not a good thing because it's not good enough.
This draft we knew was a draft that you wanted to have a high draft pick in. That was established. The Bulls knew that. That's why part of the main focus of their trade when it came to what happened to the trade deadline involving San Antonio was to get control of their pick back. It's something that you and I talked about when it came to the Sixers. I think the Sixers were more aggressive in their process. They tend to be as an organization. Daryl Morey did talk after the draft lottery, even though he was showing his agony with his head down on the table when he realized how close his team was. But, you know, you still heard from him afterward. And one of the quotes is, Daryl Morey says the Sixers plan to keep number 3 pick in the 2025 NBA draft after the lottery. And why shouldn't they? You know, that's the point, is that you hear from your executive of your team in that way, and they get so close, and even though you see Daryl frustrated on the video, that they, you know what your team is going to do. And Modest was the Bulls' representative. Modest is an 11th overall pick, and so he is proof that you can get a steal and a great pick at that point. Is he somebody you build around? Yes, absolutely. But once again, we're left in this middle place, in a middle part of the first round of the draft, trying to figure out if the Bulls were okay with this outcome, if they knew that this was likely, which I'm assuming they would if they knew their combinations. But I'm also wondering why, unfortunately, the position they're in is the difference between 1 and 12 in a coin flip.
It's a hard fall or a hard rise, however you want to describe it, between 1 and 12. The difference is there's so much in the middle. And we saw really the reality. What was great about the broadcast last night, Layla, I don't know how you felt about this, was you knew quick what it was when they started revealing. It didn't take long to know that the Bulls were stuck where they were stuck. And then you also knew quick that other teams were on the move up. And so this idea of tanking in general, you know, I know everybody's not about that life. They're not for that life. But everybody does tank eventually. You know, even the great organizations have to take a step back when they get rid of their best players. We've seen it with the most successful organizations, whether that's the Cleveland Cavaliers and how they got to where they are now, because they were able to respond once LeBron left. They were able to get Kyrie Irving. They were able to get Andrew Wiggins, who wasn't the best number one pick of all time, but he certainly was a key contributor on a championship team when you look at what the Golden State Warriors did recently. And, you know, every team, every pick that's number one isn't going to be great. But your odds of winning when you have top five picks, my goodness, it is like night and day. Now, you control what you do with those picks. You better pick the right guys. Some drafts are better than others, and I think that's the overall point we're trying to reach here, is like this was one of those drafts. And you know what? Next year's draft could be the same way. But all I see is a team who's told you what their philosophy is. They're not going to tank next year just like they didn't tank this year.
And here's the issue I have with all of this is it's not just one thing that leads to these outcomes. We just saw that. This is how the NBA is constructed. You know, we say don't hate the player, hate the game. In this case, don't hate the record, hate the league. This is the league's construction. This is them telling you how to do ball. And so if that's the case, then what are you doing to get yourselves into that point? Did I cheer? Was I thrilled when the Bulls had a great month of March? Sure. Yes, absolutely. But did we know that it would come with this risk? Yes.
I think the way the season ended, specifically with that play-in game, that makes this hit a little harder because you realize just how far away you are. And like you can look at what they did at the tail end and winning as many games as they did in the month of March and going into April. But the reality is when push came to shove against another team that's really in their same position, the Miami Heat, that's going to have to do some major retooling, although they've indicated they want to keep their all-star, Tyler Hero. They want to keep Bam Adebayo, but everybody else can be moved. Essentially, that's what Pat Riley's telling us. He's been doing this for a minute, several.
Well, and even Oklahoma City. Like, that's the one that always gets me is it's not just that their success and their path to it was so quick. It was so efficient. This all centers off of the Paul George trade and how they spent very little time in basketball purgatory. And then they were able to flip this, and you see what happened with their assets and SGA. Like, we talk a lot about Sixers and process and whatever else. But if you want to see a team that really put it together and quickly, it's OKC. And you see how they amass those draft assets. And even San Antonio. Think about that part of it. You know, they're sitting here pretty at second.
But the thing with San Antonio is they've kind of been in a purgatory-ish style. I mean, go back to when the Bulls got DeMar DeRozan. What was that Spurs team doing? They haven't done anything in several years.
Yeah.
But their future's so bright because they have so much talent. They've got De'Aaron Fox now to go with Wimby. And now they're going to have another great player. And they've got other young players. They've got the reigning rookie of the year.
Right.
And Castle.
They have a superstar. They have Stephon Castle, who, as we said, is turning heads. They have a foundation where you see not only is there a lot of years ahead of that group, but it's something where if they want to trade for Giannis?
They can.
That's the other point is you're putting yourself with draft assets. You're putting yourself in a much more flexible position to be successful in the league.
And that Giannis conversation is looming overhead. It's not going away until he either A, decides to stay in Milwaukee, which I think is getting more unlikely by the day because, you know, Damian Lillard's not coming back anytime soon.
Well, that's the other frustrating part of this is how fragile it is, even if you've got an established star in the league who you know is also playoff man, you know, and Damian Lillard, and you know exactly what he brings in the postseason. But the second you get over 30 in this league, it gets more difficult. And your odds for success, how are they affected? And that's a piece of this that is, I think, difficult to reconcile at times like this as well. Is you see the draft lottery and the draft always show me when you see teams where you can see the opportunity for them, you can see how they can construct something that they want to be upwardly mobile with. I don't think it always works, but what are you doing to give yourself the best chance at that success?
The answer for the Bulls right now is I don't know, because what they've told us, what they've expressly told us is that they want to get 9 to 10 players together that are good players, because that's what they believe in this second apron world you need to be able to compete. And we're seeing other teams do that right now. OKC is a great example, by the way.
Yeah, the CBA stands to be discussed in all of this. Vinny Goodwill hinted at it before the trade deadline on our show. And getting into that and how I think it has stymied the success and the movement of the league is worth a discussion. The apron construct and how that works together is not okay.
We're getting a lot of responses right now on the text line.
And a ton.
I mean, 630, this is what they get for quote-unquote fun March, not the way to run a modern franchise. 815, until they actually start airing the lottery drawing again, I refuse to believe that the NBA isn't influencing the outcome. Also, 574, what has really changed between Garpax and Archeris? It all feels like similar and dysfunctional. Just good enough is good enough for the Reinsdorfs.
I don't necessarily know that that's the case. But I think when you still don't know what the ultimate goal for this team is, and I don't know if it was necessarily get into a plan and see where you go from there, because you should already know where you stand against the rest of the league somewhat.
I think they know where they stand. They're much closer to the bottom than the top.
When I think about how they lost to Miami and the way they did, and then we see Miami turn around after winning another play-in game and how they lost to the Cavaliers.
The fashion in which they got blown out.
How? Right. The sheer point spread amounts that were going on in all of those games. And then you see how that gets put together. The league's telling you where you stand every single day. And it's awesome to see great performances out of players who have improved. Nobody's ever going to discredit that. You know, you and I did pre and post game forever. That's part of what makes people watch. You know, even when your team loses, you still want to see growth and progress out of people. There's always a reason to watch in the NBA every single day. And the Bulls showed you that. But when you know that fan bases will get on board with a mission statement, and when you know that they will see something take place where they know the end game is there because it's proven in the league and they've seen it day in and day out, year in and year out, they'll also be behind you in that way too.
I think if the Bulls decided right now they were going to not sign some of the veterans that they have, right, the ones that helped make that push possible, whether it's Zach Collins, whether it's Trey Jones, if they decided, hey, we're going to go with younger guys. Remember, you don't have to – the tanking is an organizational thing, not a coaching thing, because we know Billy Donovan's going to coach them up. But I think if the Bulls still had Kobe White and they still had Ayo Dosunmu, they still have you would hope they'd be able to get something for Vooch in the offseason. They still have Josh Giddey, although do not pay that man without making him sign an offer sheet first. I want to reemphasize that. That's one of the things that I looked at when I was looking at the second apron and how just a contract like that can really restrict you from what you're able to do in the future. If they did that, it's not like the fans wouldn't still go to the games. It's not like they wouldn't still come out. And if the Bulls won 25 games instead of 38 or 39 games, I don't think that's changing anything.
It changes your odds.
But it changes those odds.
And here's the thing. It doesn't necessarily change your odds that much respectively. But I think the thing you're trying to do is, as I said, shorten that delta between a coin flip deciding 1 and 12. That's what you're trying to do. You're trying to give yourself the best chance.
And you know, we sat here 24 hours ago, Layla, and the thing that I said was, hey, the NBA, by result of this lottery, can show that it's okay if you try and tanking doesn't always work. And that's what they did. Because really, Layla, at the end of the day, because of the coin flip that you're talking about, the team that did try, the Dallas Mavericks, they tried all season long. They got rewarded with the number one pick. And that's kind of the point, too.
Is that, yes, is that there is still an element of if you don't outright lose,
surprise,
you still have a chance. And that does supposed to deter tanking. You're 100% correct. The segment is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. But here's the issue. While that likelihood is a possibility, what's giving you your best chance that you can control?
From a numbers perspective, from an analytics perspective, from if you know how to do math, just make your team worse so that you have better odds.
So we have a texter in here from 773 who says that they were so mad they almost called the meatball machine. Well, oh, just call it.
Just call
then.
The meatball machine.
Should we take calls on this? Do we?
I think there's enough fire just looking at the text line.
Based on our text line and our Twitch chat, I think we, I don't know, it seems like people are more fired up about this than I thought. I was just walking in here with my own feelings today.
Well, I think it hit. Last night, it hit all the things we've been talking about. And I'm not saying like we've been talking about this season. We've been talking about for almost a decade now.
All right, 312-644-6767 or the meatball machine if you need because you're at work and you just want to vent. I'm not going to stop you. That's for sure. But this is a show where we talk about basketball a lot. You know that. I feel like it's a community. And you guys were with us on this roller coaster. We celebrated March together. I enjoyed it. I confess to that.
No, I enjoyed the development of Matas Buzelis. I enjoyed Kobe White taking it to another level. I enjoyed several things. But at the end of the day, Layla, you got to say, where are we going from here? And right now, I can't tell you where the Bulls are going from here.
Yes, 847. Light them up. We'll continue to talk about this. There's more to it also. We will get into a bit of the details. And I think Casey Johnson had a great nugget earlier when, sadly, this is perhaps not the worst coin flip in Bulls history. KC brought a nugget yesterday on social that I think is worth your time. That's all next on the...
So you have a podcast, and you really want to make money with it. Then you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. Check this out. We'll host your podcast for free. You just do your show. We'll use the power of Odyssey's massive expert sales team to place ads in your show and make you money. Does it get any easier than that? Nope. You stay in control of your show, and we help you bring in the money. Sounds like a dream partnership. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start earning more from your content today.
Score.
Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
Yeah, what is this thing?
It is a monkey's paw dating back to Alal bin Abdallah. I must strongly advise you to not purchase this. Behind every wish lurks grave misfortune.
Tommy!
You'll be sorry.
Williams Stigini over the midcourt line. There it goes. Midcourt. Oh! It's gone! It's gone! It's gone! Bulls win! Bulls win! Bulls win!
Picking 12th in the NBA draft will be the Chicago Bulls.
That's what I thought. It's Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score and you 312-644-6767. We continue to talk about the NBA draft lottery last night. It came down to a coin flip. They had the same set of outcomes, the Bulls and the Lakers, the Bulls and the Mavericks. And unfortunately, it's the Mavericks coming away with that first overall pick. And I know we've got a couple calls, so I know the text line has also been pretty busy, but that was, Marshall, one of the first things I said about this was that it was truly a monkey's paw. If it really came down to the Lakers win and the buzzer beater from Josh Giddey, that was one of the best things I've ever seen in my life in person.
There were other games.
And then the actual outcome that happened in the draft lottery. There were other games. There were 100% other games.
Well, I just...
But that, I mean, essentially, that did factor into tiebreakers.
You were there for that game, right?
Yeah, it was awesome.
See, it was awesome. So I don't think you can do this. It is not a good mental exercise. You're going to put yourself in a very bad place as a Bulls observer, a Bulls fan, a Chicago resident. If you start parsing through each and every game and how one game could have meant the difference, because one ping pong ball could have meant the difference as well.
Well, I mean, that's what we do. We review tape. Games come down to one play from time to time. You ask yourself how you get in that situation. We review games. We review seasons. That is what we do. It's not my determination as to whether or not these outcomes happen.
I just think the biggest thing is, you know, back in the day when they were running neck and neck with the Philadelphia 76ers, and I was like, hey, if you just tank like the Sixers are tanking right now, you're going to be in good shape because you'll have a 40% chance of being a top four pick. And the Sixers took advantage of that, and that's what happened. Now, the Dallas thing is a little bit crazy because they had a very slightly higher chance of getting the number one pick than the Bulls did. 1.8 versus 1.7%.
Oh, you're telling me 0.1 was the difference between 12 and 1.
I'm just saying the odds, the actual odds. That's the thing about odds. They don't always end up being, it's just a percentage chance. Strange things happen all the time. I've hit a half court shot before, but guess what? The odds aren't high on that. It
the
just
odds
happened.
Of me hitting a half court shot are significantly lower.
Than my odds?
Yes.
Probably.
Uh-huh.
Based on what you've told me about your basketball...
Lack of skills?
Acumen. As far as playing the actual sport.
Not only that, but the thing I was born with, which is height, yours is more than mine. And that's my point in all of this.
I just think, you know, you had teams like, you know, the Charlotte Hornets, who ended the game on the season on a 7-game losing streak. We knew why they were here. 19 wins. The Jazz, 17 wins. I think it's interesting that the teams with the three lowest win totals, none of them got a top three pick.
Yeah, I did joke. I texted a buddy of mine who's a Wizards fan, and I'm like, you guys were robbed. And he's like, you were robbed. And I'm like, we were all robbed. Sixers, though, at least the thing about them is they controlled their outcome. You knew exactly what was happening when they shut down Tyrese Maxey for the season. And the Jazz are still in the top five. Like, that's the difference in this.
Yeah, a top five.
The Wizards pick, are number six.
A top five pick carries a lot of weight. The fact that the Wizards had a 52.1% chance of having a top four pick and ended up with the sixth pick, that tells you how numbers work. So, you know, and I want to remind people that they can definitely give us a call, 312-644-6767, to parse this out with this segment because we are taking calls. And also go into the Odyssey app, 670 The Score. The meatball machine is always on.
It is, yeah, and it's not just for Bears, as one of our texters asked. It is absolutely not just for Bears. Yeah, so that is something that you can use anytime. So let's go to the phones right now, if that's okay with everybody. Let's start with Kevin. Kevin, you're on The Score.
Hey, good morning. So all this talk about percentage chances and a coin flip, and do we want to hit the last second shot against the Lakers? I think there's a better way, and I think it can be found in the Professional Women's Hockey League. So they announced recently a rule change where teams, as soon as they are mathematically eliminated from the playoffs, they start earning draft order points. So, and they work like standings points, but you only earn them once you're eliminated from playoff contention, mathematically. So the worst teams get to start earning points sooner than the good teams, because the worse you are, the sooner you're mathematically out of the playoffs. So then, once you're eliminated, every time you win, you get a couple draft order points, and whoever ends the season with the most draft order points gets the higher draft pick. So it incentivizes performances all the way to the buzzer of the season, because by the time the bad teams have been eliminated, they'll have more time than that they can earn the draft order points. So what do you think about a system like that, not just for the NBA, but for, you know, the NHL, the NFL, where we see tanking all over the place?
I think it's a really good point, Kevin. I appreciate the thought and the submission. I think anything that would, especially now that we talked about with the new CBA and how it's not as easy to move players and move draft picks as it used to be, there should probably be some sort of draft response into how they're doing this. Vincent Goodwill touched on it, our friend Vinny, who used to work with me at NBC Sports Chicago here in town. He talked about how the draft lottery process overall needs to be reevaluated. Now, as to whether or not teams would go for that, I don't know. But the CBA that just enacted seemed pretty prohibitive when it came to parts of this being favoring players, you know, their movement, or perhaps favoring teams. Either way, it's all worth a discussion. And with another league already doing it, that's a really good idea.
I don't hate that idea. It's kind of akin to what I always said, which is, hey, maybe when the teams have been eliminated, they should play some type of tournament to determine draft order. But then you would have teams that would tank anyway, but just be good enough to, you know, go for the number one pick if it's a Cooper Flagg type, if it's a no-doubter, LeBron James, Kyrie, those types of players. It's fascinating what the imagination can unlock if you really start thinking about how they can address this. But I don't hate that idea at all.
No, and you know what? When you talk about the tournament that you just described, here's the other part of this, is we know AAU is a foundational piece to professional basketball. Well, what do you learn how to do in AAU? Play in tournaments. Yeah. That's why the in-season tournament is partially so successful. If people hear the word tournament, they're like, oh, I'm in. You know, it's just one of those things that gets unlocked. Like, that's a mode that is very familiar. And I like that part of it. You know, I do like the in-season tournament. I like how that's gone down.
Would we watch that?
I think we watch everything. I watch the play-in game. I watch Summer League.
No, but I'm saying, what type of fanfare do you think there would be for a postseason tournament for the non-playoff teams to determine draft order?
I think as long as draft order still has this much value, you're going to get people watching.
Okay. And so that means they can make money. That means players get played. That means there is enough incentive. That means a television deal is in order. There's money to be made there. So I think the NBA might be open to something like that.
785. And sometimes, guys, your longer texts, they don't always translate on the text line, right? Like, they go in backwards order or they're out of order. I thought the NBA was going to check anti-tanking. The teams, it's pretty evident, and the draft pool talent is not nearly as great as past years. All the international talent and college prospects lucky to find a quality round two guy. Thank you for my takes. I think this is one of those drafts, though, where the NBA was very pointed in not only obtaining assets, but the effort to do so. Like, there's a reason the Bulls even wanted to protect their pick. Ultimately, that was a move that ensured them of a first-round pick, when you consider that. That's another thing, though. They increased their odds of making that likelihood happen. They knew that that was a possibility, and they did something about it. And that's kind of my point overall here.
And it's not the first time that's happened. How do you think the Spurs got Tim Duncan? Like, there's a long history of this.
But the Spurs getting Wemby is also a part of this. I also went back and looked at the Oklahoma City Thunder records. So here's why I think the process was so wild. They were 22-50 in 2020-2021 season. We know what that was. 21-22, they were 24-58. The next year, they were 40-42. The next year, 57-25. This year, 68-14.
They had young players. They put it together.
But it's that exponential growth that we talk about based on some trades that were at the time considered very controversial and blockbuster. And then you see what was happening with the asset buildup and what they've been able to do ever since. I still think that they're the team that has the most asset possibility of getting a guy like Giannis because of that flexibility. Let's go back to the phones and go to Shad on the south side. Shad, you're on with Rahimi and Harris on the score.
Layla, what's going on? Marshall.
What's up?
My man, you always my homie.
I appreciate you.
The Captain Rogers bravado this morning has really got me at a bad spot. When I heard the Bulls lost on a coin flip, for every pick that went round, I dropped an edible in my drink.
Wow!
That's
how are you talking to us right now?
I just woke up, Layla. All right, so this is where my thing is. I was completely irate last night because after we've been told to be patient, we've been sold a pipe dream to consider hope and fallacy that we're going to evaluate the correct talent and cultivate players and get this collection of guys together and run the East. We saw that with the Baby Bulls, and I don't know, Marshall, how much you saw of it when you were out of the market, but we went through that era. It was fun. The Nocioni, the Ben Gordon, the Kirk Heinrich vibes, they were great. You know what I mean? But at the same token, the teams that successfully win in drafting or tanking correctly are teams that evaluate the draft class and they scout it correctly and they set their infrastructure up before the draft picks made. You build your luck. The Bulls have hope for luck, and they have horrible scouts and horrible evaluators, so it's hard for me to get hyped on anything in terms of a possibility being positive. So I'm sorry, Captain America. I'm not feeling it.
Wow. Okay.
I'm just happy you're awake.
Yeah, that's a lot of edibles.
Hey, man, you can confess. We aren't going to arrest you for anything. I think everything you said was pretty illegal anyway, so there you go. The only thing that might make you feel bad is the result that when you wake up in the morning, the draft lottery still is what it is.
Yeah, nothing's changed. 785 on the text line. AK stinks. Just spend the money on Giannis with a new, fresh opportunity.
It's not just about money. That's what we've been trying to say.
Stop talking about Giannis as a Bull. I don't want to hear it anymore. It's not happening. They did not prepare for the moment. There are teams who have prepared for this moment. The Bulls are not one of them.
Also, I will say this. In knowing what we do know about the Bulls, that's not what they want to do. That is antithetical to what we know about their process. We know they want to get 9 or 10 above replacement players to try to make this work in a functional way. The real question now is, as Casey pointed out, it's not just Cooper Flagg setting, it's not just Giannis setting this whole market. It's not just Giannis affecting who might pick first in the draft, which is a very real possibility. It's also as much about that as it is trying to make this come together in a way that is functional. You know, like, it's about having as many draft picks as you possibly can.
And they don't have enough draft picks. They really need to go hard with trading the players they can trade this offseason to get more, to just get more. I mean, if we're going to be honest, they need more draft capital. They don't have enough because they have a minimal amount.
And maybe that's why they want to go this route. You know, like, they prioritized, maybe that was a better way for them to say that they wanted to get assets that would function. When draft picks are the whole prospect and they are the biggest goal, maybe that was something they said, well, this is an easier way for us to try to build. But unfortunately, we haven't seen the fruits of that labor totally come through yet.
I want to take this opportunity to step away from the hoops conversation and remind you that you listen today through Thursday for your chance to win tickets to our live broadcast at Brick House in Wrigleyville with special guest Ian Happ on May 28th. It's all brought to you by Verizon. Hopefully Ian Happ will be healthy and in good spirits by that time.
Also, I tease this, so I want to play it because with all this stress about the coin flip, myself included, as I walked into the office with my own feelings today, Casey Johnson had a good point.
This is the second bad coin flip in Bulls franchise history. In 1979, the Bulls lost a coin flip for the right to the first overall pick, which turned out to be Magic Johnson. The Bulls selected David Greenwood from UCLA with the second overall pick. There is a little solace in this. If the Bulls had gotten Magic Johnson, they would not have been in position to draft Michael Jordan in 1984.
Yeah, the last part. I think the last part is the most important part of that. I was like, well, if they had Magic, they wouldn't have been bad enough to get Michael.
And you know what? Fresh off of the news that he's going to be a special contributor on NBC.
Did we figure out what he's doing yet?
First thing I woke up and thought was, what would Michael Jordan say about this?
Michael Jordan would say, I don't know. What's great about it is I have no idea what he would say.
I don't either.
I have no idea, but I'm so curious. And that's why NBA on NBC, they did the right thing in getting him as a special contributor. I don't know what he's going to be doing, but I can't wait to see.
Well, the NBA did the right thing because what are we talking about today? The draft lottery for two segments. We're going to switch gears coming up next on Rahimi and Harris on The Score. Big news, not just regarding Ian Happ. You can hear him at 11 o'clock with us. That's in just under 20 minutes. But before that, we've got to set up what happened last night. Not only the win over the Marlins and how, but also the moves that have been made in response. We're getting a handle on those. We'll set it all up for you next.
So you have a podcast and you really want to make money with it. Then you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. Check this out. We'll host your podcast for free. You just do your show. We'll use the power of Odyssey's massive expert sales team to place ads in your show and make you money. Does it get any easier than that? Nope. You stay in control of your show, and we help you bring in the money. Sounds like a dream partnership. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start earning more from your content today.
Next.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
3-1 to Swanson. High fly ball, deep left center field. Still going way back there. Gone! Cubs strike first. A two-run home run halfway up the bleachers in left center field by Dansby Swanson.
And the 3-2 pitch on the way. Strike three, Coron, and the Cubs win the ball game. Pomeranz, a fastball right down the middle, and that's the way the ball game ends.
That was Pat Hughes, Ron Coomer, Zach Zaidman on the call as we see the Cubs do exactly what they're supposed to do. They take game one against the Marlins. The only difference in that game, I think, that caught us all a little by surprise was after that 5-2 win, who did we see on just before that in the bottom of the ninth inning for the save? It was Drew Pomeranz.
Well, you knew it wasn't going to be Porter Hodge, right? So, like, it was just a matter of who is it? Who will it be?
Right. And then I was like, oh, we got Drew Pomeranz on. But Drew Pomeranz got it done. Porter Hodge, of course, had I think that was an availability issue. That's a story we will continue to track, as they say, on Rahimi and Harris on The Score. But either way, Cubs get it done, 5-2 over the Marlins. But the big news, unfortunately, was that Ian Happ is getting sent to the injured list with that oblique strain. Ian Happ joins us in just a few minutes here on The Score. We'll ask him about it. And then the reported corresponding roster moves that happened instead. My first question was, I love that Moises Ballesteros is getting a call-up, reportedly. But I do think it's interesting that Matt Shaw wasn't the first thought.
That just says that Matt Shaw's clearly not ready. And maybe also it could state that they're not ready to make that type of decision yet as far as who's off the roster if Matt Shaw gets called back up. Isn't that how you took it?
There is a roster move that has to be made because of the 40-man. But just as I was thinking, I checked it on Matt Shaw's stats. He has one home run in the minor leagues this year. He's batting .262, which is significantly better than the .172 where he was in the big leagues. But perhaps that's more about what they want him to be doing at that level before he just gets the automatic discussion or is part of that discussion to move him back up right now.
I'm looking at his recent numbers, right? And in the month of May, he's batting .194. Not ideal.
To say the least.
He's got
and the slug is down a lot, too.
.324 on base, .323 slug. He's got 6 hits in 31 at-bats. He's struck out 7 times. He does have 3 stolen bases, but as you mentioned, he only has the one home run, he has no home runs in May. He has 2 doubles and a triple. And so clearly he's just not where they need him to be, especially conversely compared to Moises Ballesteros, who's been amazing. The problem with Moises Ballesteros is he's not an in-the-field kind of guy.
Right, like he's expected to get time at DH, which is what we're thinking. So then what's the calculus from there as far as the outfield shakeup? And we saw a little bit of a preview of that recently. But ideally, defensively, yeah, take your risk against, unfortunately, the teams like Miami. But when it comes to how this plays out in the future, you know, you're looking at it at a significant time on the injured list when it comes to time spent in the outfield by others.
And you wonder, with Ballesteros specifically, number one, who's playing where when he DHs, and where will he bat in the order? Those are my biggest two questions.
I think you got to put him low in the order just to not put pressure on the guy.
So you put him behind Dansby Swanson, right?
Yes, and you don't move Dansby, because if there's one thing that has continued to work, Dansby with another home run yesterday, his ninth of the season, which ties for the lead among major league shortstops. But you had Seiya Suzuki in left field yesterday. You had PCA, of course, in center. PCA was batting leadoff. He's 0 for 3 out of that spot yesterday, but that's fine. And then Tucker's in right field. So that's your defensive alignment, trying to figure this out. Carson Kelly was your DH yesterday. Makes sense. Unfortunately, he goes 0 for 3. I was a little concerned about the fact that the Cubs only had one hit through five innings.
And only one inning in which they scored runs.
Right. And against Cal Quantrill, who was serviceable when he was playing for the Cleveland Guardians. I remember him being a formidable opponent to the White Sox. Not exactly the same stuff. You know, still a guy who can throw for innings. He only ends up with 4 1/3, though, yesterday. But either way, do what you're supposed to do. You got to the bullpen. You did the right thing. Time through the order penalty did end up helping your team. Quantrill gets 3 earned runs tagged to his name.
Well, look, I think the thing that I have the most concern about in this period of time we're in right now with these 9 games, or really the 21 games, right? So we talked about how you guys thought 6 wins in 9 games, that's what the goal should be to say it was a successful run. I broadened it out last night because I went through the schedule beyond the 9 through the 21 against the teams. I was like, if they can just go 15-6, they're fine. Because you're adding 9 games over 500 to where you were at the start of the stretch. And I think that's something you should do over this stretch. But Colin Ray and the starting pitching in general, but Colin Ray specifically, I wanted to make sure he continues to do what he had been doing. Yo, for him to go 6 2/3 in a game like last night, crucial, knowing that you had just had a bullpen game a couple of days ago. You want to give your guys rest before, you know, getting into the rest of the series, and make sure that you feel good about where the Cubs are with starting pitching, especially knowing that Cade Horton's length is not where you want it to be.
Well, also, what was the thing we said yesterday? Was what they needed to do against the Marlins and the White Sox. Sorry, it's the truth. But it was go as long as you can in the starting pitching category. Go 6 innings. Colin Ray does one better, he goes 6 2/3. So do what you can to make your bullpen relax a little bit and let them get a little bit of rest so that way they're ready to go when they need to be. By the way, Ian Happ, we know we were talking to him in just moments, so we will do that next. Reportedly hitting the injured list, so we'll talk to him about it all and the Cubs on the Score.
So you have a podcast and you really want to make money with it. Then you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. Check this out. We'll host your podcast for free. You just do your show. We'll use the power of Odyssey's massive expert sales team to place ads in your show and make you money. Does it get any easier than that? Nope. You stay in control of your show, and we help you bring in the money. Sounds like a dream partnership. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start earning more from your content today.